Welcome to this week's episode of WDKN's Jesus Roundtable, where ministers gather around the Word and spend time discussing the most important person in all of human history. Pull up a chair, grab your Bible, and join us at the table.
Welcome to the Interfaith Roundtable here on your hometown station, WDKN 1260 AM and 101.5 The One FM. And we are in the Sermon on the Mount. We've been doing it for the past couple weeks, and we'll be in chapter 6 today, beginning at verse 16. Before we get started, let me introduce the gentlemen in quotations that we have here today. And they are...
I'm Matthew Hyatt from Burns Church of Christ.
And I'm Howard Wingo from the Freedom Baptist Church.
All right, I'm Richie G., your host. And today, we're in Matthew 6. So if you have a Bible and you're in a position where you can read, go to Matthew 6. So how about a little summary of where we are today? What brought us here?
We're in the Sermon on the Mount, probably the most famous sermon in the entire Bible. It begins with the Beatitudes. It talks a little bit about how Jesus didn't come to upend everything, but to point people in the right direction. And he gives some hard teachings. He says, don't congratulate yourself because you never killed anybody. The only reason you ain't ever killed anybody is because you didn't want to go to jail. God isn't satisfied with that. He wants you to be the sort of people who love and not hate. He wants you to be the sort of people who marry and stay married, who make promises and keep promises. And now he's started in chapter 6, kind of a slightly new subject. He talks a little bit about prayer and fasting and giving. And when he talks about these things, he makes a big point of saying, make sure you're doing it for the right reasons. So in our last show, we talked a lot about the Lord's Prayer, the model prayer. And here we get to talk a little bit about fasting. So how often do you fast, Richie?
Once a year. It's only for 5 hours.
Well, you heathen, I fast every night between supper and breakfast, you
that's
know.
That's an easy fast, right?
So I think fasting is probably something that the modern church is kind of neglect. I have. Mm. It's been years since I've seriously
attended. I know some who do, but it's not a lot. And raised in a Baptist church, it just never was really taught.
Yeah.
It was kind of skimmed over pretty quickly. And
well, we have fellowship meals, not fasts.
Yeah, so anyway, I don't really want to make light of something that's, because it is serious and it is important, but I was sharing with these fellows before we started that when I surrendered to preach, I decided I was going to fast. I was really into the scripture, into the word. And I saw it was there, so I said, I'm going to fast. So I was working in a factory, went to work without breakfast, went through the day without lunch. I came home. My wife had the evening meal prepared for her and the children, and I told her no. And I went to bed early so that I wouldn't be tempted. But about 7:30 that evening, I said, honey, you got anything left? She said, yeah, I'm keeping it warm for you in the oven.
she knew me.
And so... I really don't want to make light of it, but that's just where we are.
Yeah.
And how important is it, if we deny ourselves, we deny our bodies, it tends to bring us closer to the Lord. That is part of the purpose of it, though I don't know the full...
I'm not sure I do either.
I think that's the point, right?
Yeah.
Supposedly, if you deny your flesh, that you open up the spiritual more easily.
You turn down the distractions. You turn up your feeling of hunger, reminds you of your spiritual hunger.
Yeah.
You join a good list of people in Scripture who fasted, Jesus, Moses, you know.
Yeah.
Why do you think fasting is so neglected? Because I think you're right, Howard. I think our church doesn't emphasize it.
I don't know, but it's been a long time. Now, I know some folks in one of our sister churches, it's not Baptist, and they fast quite often. And
I think it's harder for us because, remember, in that day, they weren't gluttons like we are. They didn't have a huge breakfast, a huge lunch, and a huge dinner. Not that we all have that every day. Sometimes you skip one.
Right.
But we're used to having 3 squares a day and a couple in-between snacks, where they maybe ate 1 or 2 meals, but it wasn't anything close. To the, I'm talking, it's, you know, the apostles in that vein.
Well, just 2,000 years ago, it's a different world.
It's a different world.
What you're saying there, Richie, kind of makes me think that we may have even more of a need for it than they did. You know, if we are so used to abundance, scarcity is abnormal for us.
Yeah. but also makes it harder to stop because your body's used to it.
You can make it, and I shouldn't even say this, but I suppose you can make a show of how holy you are.
Yeah.
The Lord said, if you fast, don't let nobody know about it.
Yeah.
Anoint your face.
Right.
The scribes, the Pharisees, they made a point that they were fasting, and they criticized his disciples because they weren't. And he said, yeah, I'm with them, and they don't need to fast while I'm with them.
Mm.
But when I'm gone, then they will.
And to be fair, he uses almost the exact same language to describe prayer in the paragraph before, and our response is not, don't pray and don't tell anyone about it.
Yeah.
It's don't be showy with it.
Right, exactly.
So,
exactly.
You know, and that caution is well heeded, because a lot of times when I have heard people promoting fasts, they sure feel like they're violating this. You know, look, our church is fasting because our nation is in trouble and we need to fast, and look at us, we care. So we're, you know, sometimes it, and I know I'm sounding kind of judgmental, but that is how it is perceived.
Sure.
So. Well, let's read the text and talk about it a little bit.
All right, I'll read it for you. From the New King James Version. Moreover, when you fast, do not be like the hypocrites with a sad countenance, for they disfigure their faces that they may appear to men to be fasting. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. But you, when you fast, anoint your head and wash your face, so that you do not appear to men to be fasting, but to your Father who is in the secret place. And your Father who sees in secret will reward openly, reward you openly.
So there's a lot of connections between this and Jesus' instruction on prayer. You know, when he prayed, he said, go to your secret place, pray. Don't heap up empty phrases. Don't stand on the synagogues and the street corners to be seen by others. Do it the right way. And here in verse 16, he says, these hypocrites disfigure their faces so that they can be seen. So they are, you know, I mean, they're walking around with signs that say, look at me, I'm better than you.
When I fast, it disfigures for me. And I don't have to say anything. No, but they, like you said, they made a show of it.
Yeah.
It was a big spiritual, look at me, I'm fasting. You know, I think that's the point that you just made. It's nothing wrong with people knowing that you're doing it, that are around you. It's how you portray it.
Absolutely.
You know, if you tell someone that's close to you, I don't think, oh, you lose your reward. You know what I mean? Or if you do it as a church and people and everyone in the church knows about it, somehow you lose your reward.
I just wouldn't put up a billboard.
Right.
You know, I wouldn't make my Facebook status, ugh, this fast is so hard, you know.
Facebook status.
You know, I don't think I'd wear a shirt that says, don't talk to me, I'm fasting. And, you know, if somebody notices, they notice.
Yeah.
But
well, if you go to lunch with a friend and you're not eating and they know you, they may perceive why you're not eating.
You know, especially if you're in a place where everybody eats together, you know, you got a job where there's a cafeteria, you know, it's going to be hard to escape notice. But at the same time, we don't hide the fact that we pray, so I don't think we have to hide the fact, but we don't need to promote the fact. But I do think it's just so interesting, because these first 15 verses, we kind of understand Jesus regulates prayer. But when we get to these next, what, 4 or 5 verses about fasting, we think he's positive on prayer and negative on fasting. And I think he's the same on both.
Right.
Now, again, I don't want to get legalistic and say you got to fast to go to heaven or something like that, because I don't think that's what he does. But I think there's a place for fasting.
I tend to agree that it would bring you closer to the Lord if that's the reason you're doing it.
Right.
You know, I'm not because I'm trying to lose 5 pounds, though I wish I could.
Right.
But that's not the reason that you do it.
Yeah. I've done the so-called Daniel fast, but that's really a diet more than a fast, you know.
Yeah.
You're eating as many fruit and vegetables as you want. You know, there's no real sacrifice. There's a slight sacrifice. So a lot of people talk about different types of fast, but I think the Bible's clear, you know, on what a fast is. It's nothing but water, correct? What is a fast, Matthew, as far as...
I was kind of thinking there could be different types, you know.
Yeah.
Some without food or drink.
Right.
Some with only specific types. Some, you know, without certain... I've heard people fasting from sweets or fasting from...
Right, I read a book. You know, just give up Coke or give up... If you're sacrificing something, it's a fast. But I still think the biblical view of it is, you know, not eating.
Yes, I think so. I think that's a pretty good...
But you could start slowly, you know. Try not having sweets. Try not having Coke, if that's my addiction, you know. Coca-Cola, make that clear.
not cocaine. Very good, very good.
Right, you can start with the little things.
But if you got a cocaine problem, you should probably fast from it, too.
You should probably fast. At least
and I think also one of the things that hurts people is they see the example of like Moses or Jesus and say, oh, well, fast. I'll fast 40 days.
Yeah.
Hang on.
Yeah.
That is extreme.
Yeah. You and the other thing.
And you can actually kill yourself.
I have a couple books on it, and they all say, before you do this, go see your doctor.
Totally.
You have high blood pressure, or you are, you know, almost diabetic. You're not diabetic, but you're close. You know, not having certain foods, you know, you're in trouble. Your insulin drops. So there's a lot of medical reasons why you shouldn't fast 40 days. I'm sure there's some people that are in great health that can do it.
Yeah.
You know, but for the average person, you should go to the doctor and talk to them about this. That's what the books say, anyway.
I think that's good advice.
A 3-day fast is one of the most common.
Yeah.
Types.
24 hours and 3 days, I think, are probably the...
Yeah. But I have heard men who've done 40 who have said that it's a tremendous spiritual, you know, that they really feel the Lord's presence. And, you know, if you can do that, great.
I know one told me after a couple of days, you don't... You kind of get into it and you don't really miss it.
Once your body gets rid of all the chemicals that you're used to putting into your body, yeah, whether it's sugar or... After you get past that point,
my coffee, I had a caffeine headache.
Right, so. Same thing with soda.
I did 40 days without Dr. Pepper because that's my addiction, and that first week was awful.
Yeah.
After that, it wasn't so bad. I still wanted it, but the first week was not pleasant.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's caffeine withdrawals.
I pulled up fasting in my Bible encyclopedia and had a couple things that I thought were kind of interesting. Spiritual fasting entails setting aside activities as well as reducing the intake of food and replacing these things with the exercise of prayer and preoccupational spiritual concerns. So, you know, one thing to think about, if you fast, you're not just sitting there, you know, what do you do? Or right. Replace lunch with prayer, or replace lunch with service, or replace lunch with taking the money you would have spent on lunch for someone else, you know.
Mm. Good point. You're not just doing it to do it.
And one thing I'm noticing in this article is fasts were big in times of emergency. You know, that's in Judges 20, 1 Samuel 7, nationally and individually. Fasting was connected to prayer, and it's connected to a mournful attitude. One thing that this article mentions also, that regular fasts were frequently for one day, morning to evening, with food permitted at night.
Mm.
So, you know... that's kind of interesting. You see that in Judges 20, 26, 1 Samuel 14, 24, and 2 Samuel 1, 12. So, you know, maybe if some of our listeners have thought about trying to fast but say, I don't know if I can handle it, unless you're just in bad health, I think most people could do, all right, we're not going to have breakfast or lunch, and I'm going to wait till bedtime. So, you know, Howard, what you did was actually very typical biblically.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I just gave up.
Well, if you've done it on purpose, you know.
No, that you know, we have to go by what the Bible teaches more than what...
Well, and there were also other fasts. There's 3 days and 7 days and 40 days and 3 weeks.
Right.
Yeah, just listed right there.
But it was Jesus that did the 40 days. He has a little advantage.
Jesus and Moses, I suspect, are doing better than you and I are.
Yeah. But, and Elijah, I believe.
That sounds right. That sounds right. So just, yeah, think about maybe... Maybe not trying something quite so hard. Think about trying one day, you know. Yeah. And by one day, yeah, you know, all right, once you go to bed Monday night, when you wake up Tuesday, nothing till bedtime Tuesday night.
And go to bed real late.
Yeah. Eat a big meal at midnight.
Exactly.
It's like when you go to the doctor, they tell you can't eat anything after midnight. You know, you wake up at 11 just to start eating as much as you can.
Exactly.
Well... it seems like Jesus' lesson is fairly clear, even if the particulars of fasting maybe are a little bit lost to us. You know, do this as a thing between you and God. Make sure you're doing this for the right reason.
Yeah, and I think it's your heart and your intent that are the most important thing.
Absolutely.
You know, if you fail, if you go a certain length and you can't do it, I think the intent is Lord knows your heart.
Yeah.
You know, and he knows why you do things. So I think that's the main point.
Absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely.
All right. Before we'll get into verse 19 and following. Sounds good to me. You guys up for that?
Sounds good to me.
All right. We're going to come back right after this short commercial break in Matthew 6, beginning in verse 19. We'll be right back.
While we're away on a quick message break, could you help us out? If you're listening to this show on iTunes, take just a minute and leave us a review. It'll only take a second, and it's the best way to get word out about the show. Thanks for listening. Thanks for helping. Now back to this week's episode of the Interfaith Roundtable.
Welcome back to the second half of the Interfaith Roundtable here on your hometown station. I'm Richie G. We're with Matt Hyatt and Pastor Wingo here with us today. And we are in Matthew chapter 6. We just went over fasting, and now we're going to look at verses 19 through 21. I'll read those. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And that's from the New King James Version.
So there's a neat little wordplay in the Greek right here. In verse 19, the word lay up is the verb form of the noun treasure. So do not treasure treasures.
Yeah.
It's kind of a neat little don't store stores. Don't put your...
don't treasure your treasures.
Yeah.
Basically.
You know, your job is not to store more stuff here.
Wow. That's meddling. You're meddling.
You know, I wonder sometimes what Jesus would say to the storage industry. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with owning that business or even using one, but it just, it's kind of indicative of how much junk we have.
Yeah.
but it really reminds me of, is it Luke 12, where there's the parable of the rich fool? You remember... these guys come to Jesus and say, no, you know, my brother won't share the inheritance. Make him play nice. And Jesus basically says, you crazy people, that ain't got anything to do with this. Guard your lives. Keep yourself free from covetousness, for life does not consist of the abundance of one's possessions. And then he tells this little parable about a man who has crops, and they come in, and the harvest is incredible. And he says, I don't have enough room for all this stuff. What am I going to do? I know what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and I'll build bigger ones, and there I'll store all my stuff and I'll have enough to eat, drink, and be merry. And God shows up and God says, you fool, tonight your soul's required of you. Whose then will these things be? Don't store up treasure on earth.
Yeah.
You were not cranky. Yeah. You were greedy. You know, you wanted to hang on to stuff.
Which one of us don't have that? We live in a country where not only is that promoted, but it's just normal lifestyle to have things and more things, right? Keeping up with the Joneses, they don't make sayings for nothing.
Yep.
You know, we live in that kind of culture, capitalist culture, which are many good things about it, but that's one of the negative things.
Absolutely. Wealth comes at a price.
Yeah. I mean, I guarantee almost everyone, not everyone, I'm pretty close because I don't have a lot of money, but how many things do you have that you could sell and help the poor? That you don't ever use.
Don't talk about my motorcycle like that. You know, I'm meddling.
But it's just normal for us. We don't even think of that.
How many cars do we have? Yeah. How many sets of golf clubs are in the back that we don't ever play with? How many? Why in the world do I have 7 suits when I only wear 2 of them?
Yeah.
Why in the world does my wife have 83 pairs of shoes? You know.
I used to buy a
don't
new.
Go there.
I used to buy a new $500 driver. Like every year.
Yeah.
You know, because I believed, oh, this one's better than the last one. And the next year, you're like, that one's better.
Well, this one hits the ball 2% further. So, you know,
exactly.
Maybe now I'll be Tiger Woods.
Yeah. You know. But I just had that spirit of covetousness where when I would see it every year. And then one year I woke up and thought to myself, they're doing this every year. I'm going to buy a new driver every year for the rest of my life. It doesn't make it. I play 5 times a year. You know, it's not worth it. But that's just, we're bombarded with that. And because of that, that's the way we live, a lot of us, without even thinking about it.
So there's this website called whoarethejoneses.org. No, and if you get a minute, type that in, whoarethejoneses.org. And I'll try to put that in the show notes. So if you're listening online, you can find that. But what you do is you type in your income. And if you type it in, if you type in the median Tennessee income of a household of like 40,000, and remember, that's a household income for the entire state. That includes the retired and the babies and the unemployed. So I understand the number for a lot of people is quite a bit higher. I know it's lower for some.
Yeah.
But you type in that number, and it will say, you know, if you make 40, the Joneses make 50. And if you have hamburgers, they have steaks. If you have 1 car, they have 2. If you go to Gulf Shores, they go to the Caribbean. And if it kind of compares you all those things. And then it stops and it says, but wait, who are the Joneses really? And then it shows you where your income fits on the entire world scale. And if you make the median income for Tennessee in your household, you are the 88.2% percentile richest people on the earth. You are in the top 12% richest people on earth. And what the website goes on to say is, to 88% of the world, you are the Joneses, you know, that you are so interested in keeping up with. And it goes, it'll pick a random country and tell you what conditions are like there. You know, it takes you half a week of work to pay for your new iPhone. It would take someone in Haiti who makes 10 cents an hour, 7 years, or, you know, I'm making up the numbers, but, it's a really convicting site if you get a chance to go to it.
The poorest people in America, the poorest, if you take the poverty level and go a little bit under it, they're still like in the top 15. You know, they're still in the upper echelon of people in the world.
And I understand it's very tough on those people because they live in that system. You know, it's in some sense, it's almost easier if you live in a world where nobody makes more than a dollar a week because everybody's. But, you know, if you live in the world where we do, you make it 10 cents a week, you would not survive here. But I just, I bring that up to say we have so stinking much. But what do? We worry.
And we mortgage ourselves, not just our houses, because that's the way it works, but we have so many bills because of all the different, we have this phone, we, that we literally have to worry because we have all these different bills that we've set up that we, a lot of them you don't need. You know, you could live without an iPhone.
Absolutely.
It'd be hard to.
You do it.
I don't, I have a flip phone because I can't handle anything more than that intellectually.
Now, I just like to point out Howard has a flip phone, iPhone, and you don't. I'm just saying demographics-wise.
He puts me to shame.
He does, you know. But we compare ourselves and we...
And we do buy things because someone else has it, and we see something shiny and we like it and we need that. And then when you get it, you never use it.
Well, the television advertises all this until you watch it. If you watch it at all, you're going to see... I'd like to have one of those. That sure is neat. And then we start giving, we start giving this stuff to our children. There's a little 2-year-old grandchild in my house that operates my phone better than I do. So, and I'm not exaggerating. She she'll come up and take my phone and turn it on and look through it. She likes to look through the photos, and I have a picture of her. And she wants to see. She wants to see Ava. So. I let her have it, but she can operate that phone at 2 years old. And, 2 years old, we won't go there, but.
Yeah, well.
2 years old, I hadn't figured out how to put pants on yet.
Exactly.
I guess pants are more complicated.
good message here, point of, as believers, our things shouldn't be the most... That's what it comes down to, right?
Focus on the stuff that lasts. It reminds me of 1 John 2:15. Don't love the world, the stuff of the world. Bless the eyes, bless the flesh, the pride of life.
The other side of what we're talking about is savings accounts. Everybody should, if possible, have a savings account. Because you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. You're going to have an emergency. And it'd be good to have that. But to some, I suppose, a savings account... You go back to the median $40,000 here. What is their savings? You know,
I don't know.
You might say you want 10 times that, and then you'd feel comfortable. I don't know.
And, I don't know.
So where is enough? And then it becomes a point of that becomes a treasure.
Right.
More important to you, you see somebody hungry, and you say, "Well, I've got $20,000 in the bank in a savings." But I can't help them help. You know? So that's when your treasure loses its... the one with the... I'll tear my barns down. Of course, we understand. He said, well, I've got plenty. I'll share this with those who don't. But he didn't.
God never entered his thoughts.
Right.
And, you know, some of this is a matter of discernment and, you know, how much that's going to be some personal decision. That's hard to make, you know, because there is a fine line between savings and hoarding.
Right.
And I tend to think most people I know don't save enough. Yeah. I tend to think that you should save, but with the right attitude, I think.
Right. And if the money they are spending, they're not spending it on the Lord's work.
Yeah.
That, I mean, if you're doing that, then that's one thing.
So I think I can say this because this show is going to air in August. But here in a couple weeks, I'm going to do a sermon. I'm preaching through Ecclesiastes now. I'm sort of halfway regretting that because that's really hard. It's been fun. And I'm going to do a lesson or two about money in there because the book kind of lends itself to that discussion. And one Sunday, I'm going to hand out balance sheets, like an accountant sheet to everybody. They'll be blank. And so your job for the week is to make a record of every single thing you do. Now, I don't want to see it. I'm not saying bring it to church so I can approve it. That's not the plan. Yeah. That sounds a little bit like a cult. But if we are stewards of God's money, we need to know where it's going. If you called the bank and said, hey, how much money do I have in the account? And they said, I don't know. And you said, where'd it go? And they said, I don't know. You would be having an interesting conversation with a lawyer and you'd probably show up with a gun. But God entrusts us to take care of his stuff and we don't know where it went. That's not being a steward.
So think about
how much you nickel and dime yourself.
That's a good point, because if you go through and realize what you're spending your money on, I think we'd all be shocked.
Oh, man.
You know, $100 a month on soda. You know, the things you'd be like, what in the world am I doing?
How did I spend $300 on restaurants?
Yeah. I think it really wake somebody up to where their money's going. That's a good idea.
You know, it's fun. The week after that, my plan is I've got a calendar I use that lets you plan your week to the half hour with, like, daily goals with it's called the Passion Planner. I actually have a copy of it on my desk. It's what I've been using for the last few months. And the week after I do that with money, we're going to do that with time. If you are a steward of God's time, how are you using it? And this passage says, invest in the things that last. And that's not the stock market. And that's not bonds. And that's not gold. That's in Jesus. So how do you make an investment in Jesus, I guess, would be the application question from this passage.
What were you going to say, Howard?
Oh, no. I'm sorry.
I cut you off.
No. That's gone. But I was thinking, as Matthew was speaking, about the Depression time, when people who were millionaires one day were paupers the next, the banks lost it all. And some of them committed suicide. They couldn't live having lost all that money. So they really didn't have anything spiritual to keep them, did it?
No.
You know, if you was to lose it all and you had nothing to live for, then that's all you were living for.
Yeah.
Well, verse 21, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also.
Yeah.
So look closely for where your treasure is.
Now, we only have a couple minutes left, so I'm gonna ask this question. I know you'll be able to answer it in 3 minutes.
Oh, great.
What exactly is treasures in heaven?
You know, I know that's a point of interpretive difficulty, shall we say. I don't tend to read this passage literally. I don't tend to think that. I know some people distinguish between your salvation and your reward, and I don't know that I really.
I think I might could offer some illustrations.
Yeah.
Elijah went to the woman, the widow woman, who had only enough oil and meal left for one meal for her and her son. But she gave it to Elijah first. That's a treasure in heaven.
Yeah.
Because she gave her substance. The widow who gave the mite, which seemed so small, that's all she had.
Yeah.
That's a treasure in heaven.
Oh, absolutely.
If you're walking down the street and you see somebody that you can just tell, they look hungry. You can see it in their eyes. You can see their ragged clothes. And if you walk by and say, hey, I just found this, do you end up having a $20 bill? That's a treasure in heaven.
I think that's a great example.
So are you telling me you don't believe that people have different sized mansions? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, you know, I think there may be a difference in what you receive, you know.
Oh, they're very definitely.
There's degrees.
Very definitely. There are degrees of rewards.
And I think there's probably Absolutely. Degrees of punishment, too.
Yes. I think so.
I know not everybody agrees on that, but.
I hope so.
Well, they should.
Well, if we all three agree, it must be right, you know. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know that he's saying specifically, you know, you get an extra crown or a bigger mansion or how that works. Right. But I know God is more pleased and that's worth it.
Right.
You know, so I don't know.
Yeah, that's why I asked you. So
we might do a series on that thought about rewards and so forth.
Well, we know that in Revelation it talks about that they're dressed in white.
Yeah.
Right. The bride's dressed in white, which are the righteous acts of the saints. So, you know, I think it's more.
Does that mean there's going to be some naked people who don't have any righteous acts?
Yeah. But
well, it wouldn't matter if they were, but I don't think so.
So it's definitely more spiritual that it rewards than anything.
I think you're right. You know, you're right. As to the precision of what it means, I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, I just thought it'd be fun to ask you with 3 minutes to go.
Yeah.
He talks about ruler over one city, I'll give him 10 cities. We don't stop to think about the multitude that's going to be in heaven.
Yeah.
And so when you go back to Moses, there was certain people, over 10 people, over 50 people, over 100 people. There may be layers of, and this is just theology, okay? So don't quote me on this, but if I had a, well, we're not supposed to have any problems in heaven.
Yeah, that's right.
But, well, we just won't go there today.
Yeah, I see where you're going, and I see the good in it. I also see that same question that we just ran into. Mm. I don't know how it works, you know. I also don't think we have a real good understanding of heaven.
No, we don't.
I think we tend to picture floating in clouds. Yeah. And honestly, I think the picture of heaven is a city. Yeah. So, I mean, is it possible heaven's going to look a lot like Nashville?
I hope not.
You know,
probably a lot like Jerusalem.
Well, you know.
To a certain extent.
Will it look like Jerusalem in 83 or will it look like Jerusalem in 3027?
And then we're getting off into different subjects that differ between, you know.
Absolutely.
Is the millennial reign.
What does that mean?
It talks about the bear and the cow together. So there's so much we don't know.
Yeah.
Speculation after a certain point.
But I tell you what. I want to know.
Yeah. I'll see you there.
Yeah,
how about that?
That's the important thing.
I'll see you there.
And to be as faithful as we can to these type of passages.
And, you know, really, I know we're out of time, but the whole rest of this paragraph serves that point of verse 21, where your treasure is there, your heart will be also. He talks about the eye as the lamp of the body. If it's good, everything else will be good. If it's bad, it'll be bad. So who are you going to serve? Mm-hmm. Are you going to serve Jesus, or are you going to serve the world? Because you can't do both. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's this whole passage.
Right. I agree. That's a good note to end on. Matthew, give the websites real quick.
If you're listening live on the radio, first, thank you. Mm-hmm. And second, if you didn't catch the whole show or you can't tune in Sundays at 4, if you'll go to JesusRoundtable.com, you can find this show and all the previous ones and all the future ones. If you click on an episode, there'll be a box on the right where you can type in your email address and it will get delivered to you automatically for free. Or if you go to the iTunes store or on your phone, hit iTunes, you can type in Jesus Roundtable or go to Facebook, search for Jesus Roundtable Show. You'll find the show there. It's free. And that would help us out a lot, especially if you go to the iTunes store and click on review this show and leave us some comments. That would really help other people get the message. So,
all right. Thank you for tuning in, and Lord willing, we'll see you next week here on the Interfaith Roundtable.
Thanks for listening to WDKN's Jesus Roundtable. Listen live on Sundays at 4 at WDKN 1260 AM or 101.5 The One, or download the podcast from iTunes or JesusRoundtable.com.